it must come down. Let it fall from heaven above.
To SER's Arts and Culture Show.
Don't make me say it's so hot right now.
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff.
It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
Good morning and welcome to So Hot Right Now. I'm Sam Barron, filling in for Sophie Lai, who'll be back with you next week. It's about 11 o'clock on our Saturday morning. It's going to be covering all the latest and greatest arts and culture goings-on in and around the city of Sydney. This morning, we're going to be investigating some avant-garde theater blooming at the Fairfield Gardens and celebrating Iraqi culture. Our gaggle of geeks are back with some views on the new Tomb Raider film that's out, which I hear is a little bit mediocre and just okay, but we'll hear what they have to say about it. And we'll be talking to a couple of talented people involved with the play, looking at mediatization and celebrity obsession. So it's going to be a lot of fun this morning. We'll start now with a track from Fields. This is Chemistry Set. Or sorry, rather, a track from Chemistry Set. This is called Fields on 2SER. I'm Sam Barron.
Sleep, so sleep, such innocent sleep. That which steals you from the dark. Catching you sliding. Thoughts and placing them in your back. So sweet, such innocent sleep. That which steals you from the dark. Catching you sliding. Thoughts and placing them in your path. When we were seven, then you were eight. I still pay attention to all things great. Death and life, the timeless flight. Whatever is stolen is always returned. Catching, sliding, thoughts and facing them in your back. When you were young, you stared at the sun until your eyes began to burn. We're not as guilty as those who had come. Lost to them, very early. When we were seven, then you were eight. And still attention to all things claim great.
Cassiola Powerhouse Arts Centre is a world-class venue in southwest Sydney with a busy schedule of exhibitions, theatre, film and workshops. Join us in March for the Archibald Prize, Shakespeare's Hamlet, Italian film screenings and more. Set along 2 kilometres of riverfront, the Arts Centre features 2 theatres, 6 galleries and a fantastic restaurant with a Cordon Bleu chef creating an ever-evolving menu inspired by locally grown produce. There really is something for everyone, and best of all, entry is always free. Cassiola Powerhouse sponsors 2SER.
Hey. comes again. Here it 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 comes again.
Here it comes again on 2SER. It's So Hot Right Now, your arts and culture program for your Saturday morning. And attention, young theater goers, there is finally a play to speak to more of your millennial concerns. The Old 505 Theater is presenting Home Invasion, a play exploring the wicked world of celebrity obsession and the mediatization of violent acts. It's a show aiming to have you glued to your seat rather than your phone, which I might, I'm joined now by Alex Berlage and Wendy Maki. Alex is director, and Wendy Maki is acting in it. You can say hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hi. Hello. Thank you for having us.
How are you going to get people to not be glued to their phones during a theater performance? That sounds like a pretty difficult one these days.
Yeah, it's kind of challenging. I mean, you know, we might have to do a bit of a sort of a box to put your phones in before the show. But, you know, hopefully
like a trust circle.
Yeah, you know. But hopefully it gets to the stage that, you know, you don't really look at your phone. But, you know, I think we're in this sort of this generation where it's so easy to just, you know, be glued to your phone whilst on the bus and everything, and it's kind of really nice to just spend like an hour and a half or 90 minutes in this case away from that piece of technology. Mm-hmm. and if anything, this show will pretty much kind of get you to do that, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think there's also a lot of stuff that's going on in this show that's
hopefully
prevent you from wanting to reach over.
So, the Home Invasion is focusing on stories involving Paula Abdul and John Bennett Ramsey.
Yeah.
It's about society idolizing celebrities, leading into some pretty scary stuff. Can you tell us a bit more about these incidents that you focused on in the play?
Yeah, so the play's written by a young playwright based in Melbourne called Christopher Bryant, and he's really sort of interested in pop culture and our sort of obsessions and the way it's kind of pretty much defining how we live our lives. You know, we're often, we base the way we look, we act based on what Insta-famous people are doing. You know, am I a Kardashian yet? You know, I'm going to buy some Kylie Jenner lipstick and all that jazz. But, you know, it's really just how all these sort of lives of the rich and famous have, you know, invaded our lives and really sort of turned us into quite a weird species, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah, because our generation is the selfie generation, so I was particularly interested to explore those, the different levels of, you know, our society's infatuation with, like, celebrity culture and fame and what it takes to be famous.
And the play kind of takes three incidents based on real life. So one instance where there's a young lady called Paula Goodspeed who auditioned for American Idol back in the sort of, you know, the heyday of American Idol, like its second or third season. And she was sort of put on air as one of the, you know, the, you know those in the first auditions, like the crazies?
Yeah. That's got the one who's like, oh, this person doesn't have a chance because they're out of their
totally.
Mind.
Totally. And like, you know, we all sat around and
we
kind of like laughed at how like crazy and how, you know, bad they were. But little we know that most of these people that were put on the show, they're actually weren't quite well themselves. And the producers sort of just took advantage of that and kind of, you know, left them out to dry. And in this case, this young woman auditioned for American Idol and didn't really have a good time after that. And unfortunately, her story doesn't end well. And, you know, there's another instance of a young lady who's obsessed with trying to find out exactly how JonBenet Ramsey died and sort of spent her in, you know, pretty much the rest of her life just trying to unpack, you know, was it the mum, was it the dad, was it the brother? And
so just can you clarify JonBenet Ramsey for anyone who doesn't know?
Oh, yeah, JonBenet Ramsey is a young sort of Little Miss American sort of teen pageant sort of princess of sorts. So she was, you know, basically the epitome of toddlers and tiaras. She was quite brutally murdered in her home back in the sort of early 2000s, late 1990s. And it's been sort of the topic of lots of speculation as to how she actually died. And there's a documentary that was made on it recently called Casting JonBenet Ramsey, which I recommend watching as well.
Mm.
So you're dealing with these pretty, I guess, traumatic incidents that are resulting from celebrity obsession, from fame, from that sort of thing. And obviously there are, you know, previous incidents people are familiar with, like child acting
in
general.
Yeah.
How are you, you know, how are you working through this? How do you process these kind of incidents? Are you just going, well, here's some trauma for your for you audience?
No, the play is really fast-paced, high energy. It actually sort of deals in all these instances in quite an unnerving, high camp. Hollywood way. So you're watching the play and you're actually, it looks like a really fucked up comedy, if I can say that word. But the end, it takes quite a dramatic twist that I think is going to be quite unexpected and I think hit a lot of home truths. But it feels like you're scrolling through your Facebook feed and just kind of tuning into this story, then tuning into that story. And
so you're dealing with it basically in the way that people interpret or deal with things now.
Totally, yeah. So, you know, there'll be, you know, a two-minute scene which delves into that and then it's interrupted by an ad for Russian herbal supplements. And then, you know, we go into another scene where we meet June. And it's very fast-paced, very chop-and-changey, just like sort of how we interact with our phones. And
it really walks the fine line between entertainment and exploitation.
Yeah. So what's your role? Like, what is it like, you know, presenting these kind of stories?
I've got several different roles, but my base character is not, if I give too much away, but it's not actually a real person. So that's been really interesting just to unpack what, because my character is basically essentially a manifestation of June, of what she desires and wants to be.
So a much more metaphorical kind of manifestation. Yeah. Okay.
So it's been interesting to having to unpack a character like that and sort of seeing where that can go and how that develops into and what that becomes for the actual person.
June, who calls herself Paula in this play, she following her auditions takes to writing a blog, trying to sort of save face and sort of prove that she was a star, and through that sort of starts to develop an online personality through kind of like an online disinhibition effect, where often when we're online we start to project who we really want to be or hide behind this sort of anonymity that the internet provides. So Wendy plays this character who is kind of like the internet idolized version of June. So we're really trying to explore, you know, how does the media influence also how we present ourselves when we're able to completely curate who we are and what we are through pictures and text.
Obviously celebrity obsession has been a thing for probably all of, you know, human history, more or less. Everyone loves talking and thinking about celebrities. How can we do this deal with celebrities in a healthy way, I guess? Like, how is it? Is there a healthy way for society to maintain its celebrity obsession, or is the only thing that's sort of a hope that people get over it at some point?
Well, I think it's interesting because as soon as reality television came to sort of prevalence, it sort of promised that anyone can be a celebrity. And so the lines...
People like president of the United States?
Totally.
Well, absolutely,
You can be a celebrity and then you can be president.
Yeah.
And a
president because you're a celebrity.
Exactly, yeah. So we're in a very dangerous sort of territory where, you know, we're having contestants from Big Brother ending up, you know, hosting radio shows or, you know, hosting television shows or acting in Name Your Aussie soap opera. But we need to sort of regroup and sort of draw the lines between what is real and what is fiction. And the more we try and make real become like fiction, and the more we try and make fiction become like real, those lines will always stay blurred. So we just need to check ourselves on, you know, on the reality and just be more authentic.
And how we actually respond to things as well. Like, you know, I mean, I was watching an interview last night and they were talking about the current season of American Idol and how it wasn't getting good ratings because everyone was too nice, you know? Everyone was like, that was so good, you're so good. And it was like, oh no, this is actually kind of boring. Bring back Paula.
Well, so I mean, the thing is, I notice when I watch reality television on like Channel 7 or whatever, it's just endless, you didn't say that, he didn't do that, I can't believe these people are so messed up in the head. Where do you think this lust for people, you know, having horrible times comes from? Like, is it because our own lives are lacking that, or like our own lives don't have enough flavor or excitement, or...
I think it is. I think because a lot of people tune into that because it sort of reflects what their own strengths and their own weaknesses are, I guess.
And I think, you know, when we look back at sort of the golden age of talent reality television, there was a lot of vitriol and a lot of actually really mean things being said. Like, we all remember, like, Paulini in the gold dress. Like, that was, like... completely not okay, you know, those comments. And just, you know, just even looking at those initial audition rounds, we lived for the bad auditionee and the sort of the critical judgment that came as a result. But now, as we're becoming so much more aware of just being a good person and not being a dick, and also just being more aware of mental health and depression and sort of anxiety, I think we're coming to terms that, you know, we just need to be better people, and that sort of previous sort of adrenaline that came from watching other people suffer is no longer okay. Not that it ever was, but we're actually realizing that that is definitely not okay.
Bit of empathy. Well, okay. So it sounds like you're dealing with some pretty great stuff in this production. Thanks very much for coming in this morning to have a chat about it. And the actual dates of it, when is it actually taking place? I seem to have misplaced my
information
sheet here.
We have our first performance on the 21st of March.
Excellent.
And,
next Wednesday?
Next Wednesday, and then close on the 7th of April. So it's a nice short season at the Old 505 in Newtown.
Yep, so again, Old 505 Theatre Newtown, if you want to walk down, it's down a side street. You can find it on Google Maps, and then don't be put off by the chain link fence and barbed wire.
Just roll on through.
Thanks very much. This is
Alex
and Wendy. Thanks very much. Jeez. And you can also listen back to this and get the details on the website 2scr.com if you search up So Hot Right Now. Go check out Home Invasion. It's about nearly 20 past 11 here on the show. We're going to be having a listening to our gaggle of geeks. They have some things to say about the new Tomb Raider movie coming out. I still can't believe I just... farming endless sequels to legacy movies forever and ever. This right now, take you there. This is Dave Richmond with Heavy Lead on 2SER.
weekend inspiration or a midweek treat? We've got you covered with our new What's On page. Everything from galleries to gigs, classes to comedy, and festivals to free events. Head to 2SER.com/whatson for more info. 2SER, stories, ideas, music.
This is So Hot Right Now. I'm Sam Barron filling in for Sophie Lai, but you can, of course, hear Sophie Lai right now with the Gaggle of Geeks podcast, where they are having a chat about the new Tomb Raider films. So here's a little bit of an excerpt of what they've been chatting about on 2SER.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks with
Blake Howard
and Sophie Lai.
Good morning, Blake Howard of Graffiti with Punctuation.
Good morning, Soph. Good morning, geeks.
Good morning. It is a geeky wide world, and we have plenty to talk about, especially if you're a gaming and film fan.
Yes, we are talking about Lara
Croft.
But not the, like, campy Angelina Jolie one. The new one with, like, badass, I've been shredded in the gym with Alicia Vikander.
Jesus, she was so shredded.
So, here's a weird thing.
Yep.
I have watched heaps of movies and thought, man, wouldn't it be amazing if this movie had a game?
Yep.
And, like, I'm a Michael Mann obsessive. We've talked about it a couple of times, but, like, imagine, you know, I find myself with his movies or, like, movies of that ilk going, oh, wouldn't it be so cool to play like Red Dead Redemption as a character from Last of the Mohicans, you know, with a musket and a hatchet? Or wouldn't it be awesome if Heat was like a heist game like Grand Theft Auto? Like, wouldn't it be amazing with those characters to you know, rob stuff? The problem that video game adaptions always have is like I coined a term in a review a couple of years ago, and I just keep using it. It's like, I call it auto-redundancy, meaning that you play a rad game, and this film is based off of the 2013 game of the same name, which is kind of like the reboot of the Tomb Raider franchise.
And that one was an origin story of sorts.
Yeah, it was an origin story that they hadn't pursued in the games before. And I just feel like I really wonder, for hardcore gamers and huge fans of the franchise, and I'm only a passenger. I'm just a person who's, you know, gone through.
Yep.
Whether watching the movie is actually like a lesser experience than playing the game. Because although this is a movie that they're taking really seriously, they've got good, you know, great cast, solid director, the screenwriters are clearly doing their work to adapt it as best they can. Tomb Raider is kind of like, it's a very okay film, but I don't know if it is a good film. So I'm slightly conflicted on it. The story, just to give the gist of the synopsis, is that, you know, Lara Croft, who's played by Alicia Vikander, Oscar winner Alicia Vikander, she's been orphaned by her dad, Lord Richard Croft, who's played by Dominic West, McNulty from The Wire, if you're a fan. She's orphaned by him because he doesn't return home from an expedition. And she goes through this tough patch of her life as she sort of denies her inheritance, denies everything that's connected to sort of a well-off life in order to just sort of be in denial, like he has left her. And right at the moment where she sort of surrenders to the fact that he's probably dead, she gets a clue to this expedition, this final thing that he had to go and do. And she discovers that his life's work has been uncovering sort of these mythical stories connected to death. And so in the pursuit of finding her father's last mission and seeing what happened to him, she kind of gets entangled in his last mission. And some other sort of spooky things happen, along with spooky organization known as the Trinity Organization, and Walton Goggins is kind of at that last destination in the secret devil's waters in one of the islands off Japan. So she gets entangled in that. But yeah, there's a lot of things that are really good about this movie, and I don't want to poo-poo it, because it's really difficult when you're talking about a movie that's just solid. And it is absolutely solid. I think Vikander does a good job, and I think there are some really cool stunts. I think that sometimes the CGI money is like, how do we show that we don't have great special effects in this? We make it dark as hell so people can't take notice. But overall, I think there's some really powerful moments. I think there's some great emotional moments. But I just... it wasn't a very fun movie, Soph. I didn't really smile except for an amazing moment where Nick Frost comes in as a cheeky proprietor of a pawn shop and sort of flirts with Alicia Vikander. It's like one of the only beautiful moments of relief and levity in the movie. And so, yeah, Tomb Raider, you know, in summation, is a very solid film. If you like the 2013 reboot of the game, I'm guessing that you're going to really dig this. I don't know enough about the whole franchise. I'm not as big a fan as others to tell you what's out there, but I know that the game is like really bone-rattling and bone-jarring, and Vikander definitely does, you know, gets a go at that. And I think it's really fun. But also, the massive problem that this has as a movie adaption that makes it sort of dampens the fun is... every single video game adventure, archaeological, Tomb Raider character is an Indiana Jones ripoff. And when you take it from the game and you put it on the screen, the ripoffness stands out. And so there are also massive chunks of this movie I have a massive problem with because they're essentially lifted from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And they're nowhere near as fun as Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. So look, it's solid. I'll forgive them their homage, but I don't know. What did you think, Soph?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a solid film, as you mentioned, a very solid action film.
Yeah.
Barely any levity, and, like, you know, the slight bit of levity, like, aside from Nick Frost, there was, like, her time on the boat with Lu Ren, who's played by the amazing Daniel Wu. It was like, oh, look at this. This is fun.
Then, yes.
And then suddenly it was just like grim, 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 grim. But overall, like, I enjoyed it thoroughly. Much better than probably the Angelina Jolie one.
They were very camp fun. The first one was camp and fun.
Yeah.
The second one was pretty garbage. But the first one was pretty
camp. They were camp fun, but also they were all very catered to the male gaze. They're like, let's just, you know, highlight her ass and her tits for a bit longer. This was just like, you know, full just strength coming from Alicia Vikander, which I really enjoyed. I had a few issues. I'm like, girl, you cannot run that fast. Without food, like 2 days without food. And then when she just like goes, I'm going to go on a rescue mission. I'm like, you don't have any supplies. This is, what are you doing?
She has a backpack. Yeah, no, I agree.
Threw the backpack down and just started running in the forest.
And look, she does take a battering, you know, and the 2013 game, as I said before, has been described to me as like a grisly experience. Like people who've played that game have described to me that if you like take a stack in that game where you fall off a waterfall, the game makes you fall down the waterfall and then watch a twitching body, blood spurting and dying. Like, it really shows you the consequence. Obviously, it doesn't get to that level in this movie because she gets battered, but it's the same thing. Like, I think at one hand, they do a really fantastic job of kind of doing the John McClane with her. They show that she gets beaten up.
Yep.
They show that she takes hits. They show that she gets all bloodied and punctured and needs DIY surgery. But then at other parts in the movie, she's like running through a collapsing cave and the worst thing that happens is she gets dust in her hair. And it's just like, there's a weird balance they're trying to strike.
It's exactly the beginning. Like, you know, they show her getting beaten up in her, like, hometown of London. So you're like, oh, she's not infallible, right?
Yeah.
She can get beaten up. And then there's that bloody scene at the end. I'm like, when did she become Superwoman between then and now?
Yeah, it's a hard look. And the reason I would say, this is what I say. It's a hard balance to strike, and some actors get away with that kind of BS, like The Rock in some movies, or Vin Diesel, like where like in the Fast and Furious movies, they just make up physics, like things don't exist, you barely even get a bruise.
Oh, yeah, like running a car off a submarine?
Yes.
That's still the greatest.
Still good. But look, I don't want to poo-poo Lara Croft, because I actually think that Tomb Raider, the best thing that Tomb Raider did was create the possibility of a platform for more Tomb Raider movies.
Yep.
And I think that if anything, it leaves you hopeful that there's going to be more. But as an origin story, as Soph said, there's not a lot of levity. It is quite grim. It is quite hardcore. It does lose its way in some ways where, like, it doesn't quite nail the pace of, like, they want to show how she becomes the awesome heroine that is Lara Croft Tomb Raider that we know from the game. Mm. But at the same time, you know, it's like at the beginning of the film, for example, she runs into a cop car on a push bike And then later on, she's launching herself through a cave and like landing with one hand and catching it with like a hook, which is in all the trailers. And it's just, it's like,
how do you get up skills so quickly when you have no rest, no food?
Like, have a puncture wound in your side.
Yeah. It just like,
there's a few things in there. It's just a bit,
What?
But it's,
it's a solid film.
It's solid. It's solid. Without being, without blowing your socks off, it's solid.
Well, the one thing I was really excited was to see Asian male in the film.
Asian male?
Asian male.
Badass.
That wasn't like, you know, that wasn't a stereotypical villain.
No. Wasn't a moustache-twirling villain.
Wasn't a moustache-twirling villain. And he wasn't just, you know, part of the gang. Like, actually solid character.
he was, and
I just wish they used him more, because then they just like had it like introduced him as a great character, and then it was just like, where'd you go?
Daniel Wu, a bit underutilized, like great in concept, but just bland on execution, I think. So yeah, Tomb Raider.
I'm sorry to end. I just want to say I'm sorry again to the listeners that it's a conflicted review, because we want you to see this one.
It is. I like. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it. It was just not funny.
No, it was not funny. There are two really great funny bits.
And they're the beginning of the film. And that's about it.
Yeah.
Don't expect any laughs after, like, the first act.
Yeah, it gets gritty. But we'd be super interested to hear from you if you dig it. Or if you don't. Or if you hate us with the fiery passion of a thousand suns for ruining your first lady of gaming.
Soz.
Hashtag Sozzles.
We also have our podcast on the iTunes and every good podcast player, Gaggle of Geeks. Look it up.
Yes. Subscribe, rate, review, and reach out to Soph at Soph_light or me at BlakeIsBatman on the Twitters, or always at 2SER on the Twitter sphere as well, because that's where we like to hang.
Hang a lot there.
Mm.
It's a fun place.
I like Twitter. It is not the death trap that most people say that it is.
You get some gold moments on Twitter.
Mm.
Some very woke moments.
Yeah, it's the woke is strong.
And some very great arguments that you just keep following the thread and you're like, cool. Oh, this has escalated. Where are we going now?
Mostly you find awesome peeps.
But you find a lot of awesome peeps.
Yeah.
But till next time, Blake. Bye. Bye.
And that was Sophie Lai and Blake Howard with the Gaggle of Geeks. A little bit amusing about Twitter there at the end. They're chatting about Tomb Raider, the new film out. The verdict seems to be, it was all right. But, you know, nothing too much special. So you can have a look for yourself if you're into that. But maybe don't expect too many miracles. It's about just past 11:30 on 2SER. Here's Humans from Sarah Belkner. In a moment, we're going to be talking about Iraqi culture blooming in Fairfield.
stem washes out everything, makes us feel like humans again. This is when the rain comes down. This is where the rain comes down, washes out everything, makes us feel like humans again, makes us feel like humans again.
Belkner with Humans on 2SER. This is So Hot Right Now, Arts and Culture for your morning. I'm Sam, filling in for Sophie Lai. And Western Sydney will be blooming with avant-garde theater inspired by a local community and the rich and vibrant Iraqi culture in Little Baghdad, cafes and gardens. This event's going to be showcasing art, music, and a plethora of stories about what it means to be Iraqi in 21st century Australia. I'm joined now by Artistic Director of PYT Fairfield, Karen Therese, to tell us about the show. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
No problem. It's great to be here. Good talking.
Absolutely.
Little Baghdad. I'm right here in the garden now, actually, just setting up some things.
Uh-huh.
Little Baghdad is it's a garden party set in the Parents Cafe Gardens. And the Parents Cafe is one of the best resettlement services for refugees in the world. And it's been acknowledged by the United Nations as one of the best resettlement services in the world. And basically, we've an installation. We built an installation in the garden and a dinner party, an Iraqi dinner party in the garden. And there's slam poets, there's stories, and there's just this, and there's two Iraqi bands that join together to create one massive orchestra, and it kind of ends in this beautiful celebration and party.
So Karen, what does this space look like that you're there right now? Can you tell us a bit of what it looks like as you look around?
Well, essentially, the Parents Cafe is a refugee. It's a refugee community garden. So in Fairfield High School. So it's really, as much as an artwork, it's a community action to get people to come and find ways to, you know, to create more cultural movements, to join communities, the broader Australia and the refugee community together. So right now, I can see about, you know, 20 Persian rugs on the ground, covering the grounds of the garden. I can see an enormous amount of gold on water barrels. There's a huge amount of produce gardens, there's mud huts with video projections.
So all sorts of stuff, all sorts of stuff all around you. And how's the space going to be transformed for the actual show, or
is
the transformation?
Yeah.
Oh,
usually
wonderful!
It functions as a refugee community garden,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's and so we've put the Persian rugs there and the video artwork,
right.
and the gold. Yeah.
And so it's also going to involve a lot of stories from what it means to be Iraqi in Australia today. Can you share a sense of what those stories might be like where they've been gathered from? You know, what are they talking about? What do they deal with?
What do Iraqis deal with? Well, I suppose they deal with a lot of isolation from the broader Australian community and a lot of misunderstanding about who Iraqis are and what it means to be a refugee. And the stories are about the joy and the spirit and the intelligence of the culture. And last night we had some young teenagers, actually, who've been in Australia for probably only 8 months, and they come from Syria. And they were talking about asking people not to feel sorry for them, that they, you know, they have resilience, and to be their friend.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things about and also that Australia has a lot of problems, and we all just need to be friends, and we all just need to love each other. And that's the main message that's coming from the Iraqi community. You know, it's you know, the Australian government are telling people that they're kind of isolating our communities. They're separating all Australia from the refugees with a huge amount of mixed and confusing messages. But essentially, these people, asylum seekers, are new to our country. They don't know. They're learning the culture. They're learning the language. They're trying to get jobs. You know, and they just want to make friends. The Absolutely. Same as you travel to a country where you don't know the language, don't know anyone. You know, you want to meet someone who kind of brings you into the culture. It's that simple. And Little Baghdad, Cafe Zingarden, is really about coming together with a radical kindness and friendship and sharing food.
So what are you hoping that...
forget about what politicians are telling them.
What are you hoping that people who attend will walk away with? Is just that friendship and that sense of, you know, of culture and connection?
Well, we've had a couple of community actions. People walk away more than that. People who even just worked in the garden to help us prepare for the event feel like someone said that they feel like they've, like, their soul is kind of in a good place now. Like they've, you know, they didn't realize how much anxiety they're walking around with, knowing that there's a lot of suffering out there, and now they feel like they're actually doing something. They're actually doing something, and they feel like, you know, they're connected.
Absolutely.
They're connected. Because, you know, you've got to realize people are being told not to connect. And so, yeah, it feels like it's, you know, people are really feeling like a rich warmth and connection to the whole of Australia, not just one part of it. People learn to dance a dabka, which is a beautiful dance where you hold hands, and people learn a little bit of a just come away with a lot. People come away with a very full belly.
Do you have a favorite part of the event that you're really looking forward to in particular?
Well, I love the whole. It's a kind of whole immersive thing. I mean, the band is amazing. The dancing, particularly, is great. We've had a There's a gallery installation in the garden,
yeah.
The second garden section, where a number of Iraqis have created paintings that are exhibited throughout the garden, and that's a number of Iraqis tell stories about those paintings, and that's pretty amazing. But the main important thing is that the messaging is that, unfortunately, the Parents Cafe, even though it's one of the best resettlement services for refugees in the world, the government is no longer funding it. Mm-hmm. So it's only got 3 more months of funding. And we're using this project as a community action to try and gain support and for the Parents Cafe to stay open and for the garden to keep going and for all the social enterprises that are attached to this organisation to stay open. So look for it out online. We're going to be running a crowdfunding,
Okay, well, best of luck with that, and I hope that it goes very well for you as well and that people get a lot out of it. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
All right, thanks for having me. Cheers.
And that was Karen Therese, the artistic director of PYT Fairfield, telling us about Little Baghdad Cafes and Gardens, which is going to be taking place in the Fairfax Community Garden High School in Sydney's West from the 16th to the 24th of March, running from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on those days. We'll put details up on 2SER.com. If you search up So Hot Right Now, you can find out more about exactly what is going to be happening. It is about 11:45 here. We're not done yet, of course, on this. We have a little bit more culture to share with you. Black is the New White, a show that sold out its 2017 season, is back again, just finished at the Sydney Theatre Company, but is moving to the Riverside Theatre in Parramatta. We're learning a little bit more about that in just a moment. But to take you there, this is Kicked in the Head by a Horse with Osmutience on 2SER.
I'm not afraid to die. QSER 107.3 FM and now digital.
Children of Paul on 2SCR. This is So Hot Right Now, Arts and Culture for your morning. A young leader in the Australian Aboriginal community, Nakia Louie, is known for her contribution to The Guardian, ABC's Q&A, The Drum, and many more. But today we're discussing her hilarious, inventive, and highly acclaimed play, Black is the New White. It's a romantic comedy detailing the story of lawyer Charlotte Gibson, who has a seemingly bright future ahead of her. But there's two things in the way. Christmas and love. As the story unfolds, secrets are revealed and prejudices are outed. Our producer Nicole Beck spoke with actor Anthony Talfa, who plays Sonny in the performance, to find out more about the work.
Can you tell us a bit about your character in this work? What is his role in the narrative?
In Black is the New White, I play a character named Sonny. He's a former Aboriginal captain of the Wallabies, and then he becomes a financier, a stockbroker, and he uses his clout as a famous sportsman to create stocks and bonds for people.
So Black is the New White is a romantic comedy that explores both love and politics. What role do you think humour plays in this somewhat politically driven work?
The main character is Charlotte Gibson, and she's definitely someone who's similar to Nakia Louie in regards to having a voice to speak socially and to speak politically about issues. And it's also her father. Her father is Ray Gibson, and he also is a speaker of social injustice and racism and politics. So the two main characters, the father and daughter relationship, constantly talk about politics, and it's hard not to be in politics if you're being politicised all the time.
Definitely. So this is actually your second time performing Black is the New White. Do you think it's changed much since the first shows back in 2015?
Yeah, we had a go at doing the play last year at the Sydney Theatre Company, and it was a sold-out season. And I think the show that we've created now, we've got two new players, Nakia Louie as Rose Jones and Tom Stokes as Francis Smith. And I think the show has just become a little bit bigger and a little bit more almost farcical in a proscenium arch space. So I think that the product now is better in regards to having life. We know the characters, we know the play, so we're able to make that a little bit bigger on stage in a proscenium arch, in a bigger space with 800-seat theatres rather than just a 350-seat theatre we did last year. So, yeah, I think it's gotten bigger and better.
Along that line, in terms of production, I've heard really great things about the work's soundtrack. Can you tell us a little bit more about the music in Black is the New White?
Yeah, definitely. The soundtrack for our play, it's set at Christmas time, so I think a lot of black families, brown families have a soundtrack to their Christmases. Ours was the Boney M. Christmas special. Some people had Mariah Carey's Christmas special a lot later in the game of Christmases. So the music in our play really informs what's going on and a specific time in our lives as well. So I think Christmas time is definitely one of those times where a certain evocative soundtrack happens, and you definitely associate the songs that we have in our play with Christmas.
This is obviously a very original and exciting work. What does it mean to you to be a part of this cast and under such an amazing playwright?
Doing Nakia Louie's Black is the New White, I think, is a game changer in the Australian theatre scene. I think we have classic Australian plays that don't speak to someone like me, someone who is a suburban kid who has lots of family, who is brown-faced and not a white person necessarily. And so a piece of theatre that speaks to me and to my Australia, I think, is an important voice to have. And this is a pioneering play as well as it's a game changer, because hopefully it changes the conversation of what it is to be black on stage and what it is to be black in this country.
Definitely. It's very powerful. What would be like an ideal outcome from this work in terms of its pioneering attributes?
I think if this could continue being played, being taught in schools, so all the drama schools, if they could take out pieces, either monologues or scenes from our play, I think that will be beneficial for teaching younger people that there is a diverse voice on stage and that there is room for their voice in society. I think maybe a television show or a movie, this could possibly reach even further with a movie or a television show overseas. And I think it then would promote Australia as an individual voice, to have Aboriginal Australians be the primary focus of a story, be the main characters. If it could live on into the future, I think that'd be beneficial for everyone.
Yeah, 100%. Do you find that theatre is an industry that struggles particularly with diversity, more so than other arts communities?
Theatre in regards to diversity, I think it's a general problem. Mm. It's a television problem, it's a political problem in government, it's a problem across the board, that this play is being part of the voice of change, hopefully, of questioning our privilege, of questioning male to female privilege, of white male privilege, of privilege in general. So I don't think it's not just necessarily a theatre thing. I think it's a social issue, that there isn't enough diversity for everyone. To say what you see in the street and what you see on television or in the movies or in Parliament, I think if we could have more diversity in that, I think that would be a much better country and would be able to define ourselves better.
Yeah, it's incredibly like alarming how far behind other countries we are. Just looking at American television and film, it's just like incomparable to Australian.
So, agreed. And yeah. English as well, yeah.
Thank you so much for your time. I've absolutely loved chatting to you about the work. I can't wait to go and see it.
Thank you for having the chat.
That was Nicole Beck speaking with Anthony Taufa, an actor in Black is the New White, which sold out shows, sold out theaters last year and is back again. You can catch the play at the Riverside Theater in Parramatta from March the 21st to the 24th, and we'll put up links to tickets on our website. We're coming up to the end of the program in just a moment, but before I say hand you over to our afternoon programs, I'm going to play you a track from the Ice Bowls. This is Tararara on 2SER. The Icy Poles with Tarara on 2SER. This is So Hot Right Now. Just about to pass you over to our afternoon programs, but thank you very much for joining me this morning and hanging out with me. I'm Sam Barron, filling in for Sophie Lai, who'll be back again next week. And thanks very much to our guests this morning and producers Lakshmi and Nicole for a wonderful job. As always, have a very cultural weekend. I'm going to leave you now with Spanish Gold from Day Drinking. Have a great day.